Okay, I guess I want first to thank the organizer for giving me the opportunity to present this work here. And I guess I will start my talk by an introduction, rather elementary introduction, on thermodynamic measurements in 2D gas. I guess one of the reasons is that most of you don't hear talks on thermodynamics as often as composite fermions, for example. And the second thing is, of course, I have to think about the 200,000 internet groupies, you know. That, okay, so the motivation is very simple. We wanted to have some thermodynamic information on the fractional state. And I will first start by reminding you a few things about the integer behavior. Now, as you all know, states collapse into Landau level in a magnetic field, which have a degeneracy, which is essentially given also by the magnetic field. So the energy associated with the total energy will be essentially the energy of a given state times its occupation. And since both of them are linear in field, the product is quadratic. So in the end, the total energy of a two-dimensional electron gas is made of piecewise parabolas corresponding to this quadratic function. Being understood that each time you switch, the chemical potential switch from one Landau level to another, you go from one branch to the other for the total energy. So the net result is if you plot the magnetization, which is simply the derivative of the free energy with respect to the magnetic field, you get this sawtooth, you know, this power sawtooth prediction behavior, where you find a magnetization that oscillates as a function of magnetic field each time you and you have a jump in magnetization each time the chemical potential jump from one Landau level to another. Now, of course, if there was no disorder nor interaction, there would be no quantum Hall effect. So we obviously have to go beyond this and worry about interactions and disorder. So let's first say a few words about disorder. Now, this is the very nice, very old, and very very useful Hall print picture of the Hall effect, where you have essentially a given, let's say, a Landau level which is filled up to a chemical potential which I've drawn, let's say, here in A, for example. And due to the underlying background potential that comes from the doping, for example, or in-plane impurities, you have fluctuation of this potential, and so you may have areas where you have states that are localized inside the bulk of your sample. Now, of course, when you do a thermodynamic measurement, you see all the states, whether they are localized or extended. And one of the interesting things is to get information about localized states, which are more difficult to get when you do a transport measurement. So typically, you are in a situation where you have an extended state where the number of lakes and mountains sort of occupy the same amount of space in your sample, and sort of like in the B position. But when you will be doing your thermodynamic measurement, all the states will contribute. You know. Now, the net result of this disorder, of course, is to broaden the Landau level. And I will make you make a very naive picture here that I think might be helpful to understand, you know, the various pieces of the experimental curve that I will show you. So typically, you have this extended state in the middle of the Landau level, and you have some broadening due to disorder. Now, typically, the states that are close to the extended state, sort of like in the middle, comes have a long localization length, which are usually due to the long-range part, you know, fluctuation in the disorder, whereas right in between Landau level, these states are usually localized on a much shorter length scale, and they come from the short-range component of the disorder. Now, because so when you do a transport measurement, you will be basically measuring the distance between the boundaries of these two extended states here and here. And so this would correspond to the transport gap that you would measure. Now, in the thermodynamic measurement, it's more difficult to define precisely a thermodynamic gap, but I will do it in a way which is very crude, and as you will see, it's roughly correspond to what one sees in an experiment. I will imagine, for sake of simplicity, that my density of state is made out of, let's say, a large square region around the lambda level, where I have essentially localized states that are on each side of my extended state, and I have a low density of states in between. So, in this sense, if I want to define the Thurman-Mielke gap, it will essentially measure this quantity that is between these two edges. So I want to explain to you, using this picture, what are the different effects. Where do these various localized states come in an actual measurement of the magnetization? Well, if I turn this around like this, when I vary the magnetic field, of course, the degeneracy, as I say, changes with magnetic field, and the chemical potential will vary as I vary the magnetic field. And so, instead of, if I had no localized states, and I would be, let's say, always here, I would have the chemical potential will be pinned here for, well, will stay here until I exhaust all the available state, and then the chemical potential will start to move. Now, because of I have localized states, the chemical potential starts to drift down for a while, and so the effect of this is that I will reduce the jump in chemical potential and therefore the jump in magnetization. So effectively, the last picture translates in those terms. If I had no disorder, I would have the sawtooth I showed you, but due to the disorder, the effect of the broadening of the Landau level here simply reduced the amplitude, and then the low residual density between Landau level simply will give me the width over which the chemical potential drops as I vary, let's say, from one Landau level to another. So essentially, I can look at my at any data and sort of have an idea of roughly what every piece is. Now, what is important is to understand that there is a relation between magnetization jumps and energy gaps, and I already hinted to that precedingly. And this can be made precise using a Maxwell relation on the grand potential, where I write this Maxwell relation, and I use the fact that the degeneracy per Landau level, as I say, is linear with magnetic field. So the derivative of n with respect to b is essentially proportional to n over b. So if I integrate the dm by d mu over a jump. A jump of the chemical potential, I essentially get this relation: the jump of magnetization is related to the jump in chemical potential divided by B. And you can think of it in a very naive way. It's just like imagine that you have two reservoirs of water here, and as I vary the magnetic field, essentially the number of states, let's say, in the bottom increases linearly, and so my level decreases. So it's just like removing the water from the bottom. And so if I ask what the pressure difference between this point and this point is, and the pressure is the derivative of the free energy with respect to the volume, just like the magnetization is the derivative of the free energy with respect to the volume, well, the difference here, of course, is for a homogeneous fluid is a height difference, which is just like the difference in energy. So this is a very simple, very nice relation, which allows me from the jump in magnetization to get the jump in chemical potential. And that's very useful, not so much for the integer quantum Hall regime, where, of course, I know roughly what the jumps are going to be. But, of course, when I have interactions or any other things like that, that will be important, because I will be able to get, directly what the thermodynamic gaps are without any specific model here. Now, there is one complication to what I just said, which has to do with the fact that we don't measure really magnetization, we measure torque. It's a mechanical torque magnetometer that we use to measure this magnetization. And this means, now I'll just show you briefly the magnetometer. It's just a wheel that is, can turn around a very thin wire. and we can measure the position of the wheel by a set of electrodes. But the point is that the rest position for this magnetometer makes an angle with respect to the magnetic field of the order of 25 degrees. And so this means that you always have an in-plane magnetic field in your problem. Now, this is not very important for all the orbital properties, which essentially are only sensitive to the normal component of the magnetic field. And the torque you measure is essentially the component of the magnetization perpendicular to the field, so which is proportional to the total magnetization for any orbital properties of a two-dimensional electron gas. But you also have spin components, and this angle this question of this angle has to be kept in mind, especially when one will want to discuss objects like skirmions, which have a complicated spin structure. Now, this is typically a curve that you get, a magnetization curve that you get in the integer regime for a high mobility sample. This has a mobility of 2 × 10⁶. So, first of all, you don't get this curve. You need to do a few things before getting, this curve. First, you first have to worry about the fact that you have some background in your measurements, and we do that. We do remove this background in various ways. One, by having a small coil on the magnetometer that compensates for this background in situ, but also in the end we do remove the residual background just by making a fit, of the background magnetization. And removing that from the actual signal. Now, the second thing which is necessary is that because you have a resistivity which is very low in the quantum Hall state, when you are in the middle of the plateau here, the actual resistivity rho xx drops to very low values. And so when you sweep the magnetic field, it's very easy to induce non-equilibrium edge current. As had been said in some previous talk the previous days. And these are very, very, very much of a problem when you want to get the thermodynamic measurement. Now, we found out that when you illuminate the sample with infrared diode, you can actually quench this non-equilibrium current in a way which is very effective. And this is the why we were able to get rid of most of this non-equilibrium current. Now, if you want to understand, if you are interested in understanding what these non-equilibrium are about, I would be happy to answer your question in the end, because I understand these things to my satisfaction. Now, if you want to make sure that the understanding of the effect of disorder in the integer regime is clear, you can, for example, go to high filling factors. You take high density samples, go to high filling factors, and you take the 2D version of the Lifshitz-Kosevich equation, which is basically what the sawtooth looks like at finite temperature, and then you replace the temperature by something like a Dingle temperature, which measures essentially the scattering time. You assume that the scattering time goes like square root of b, and the origin of the square root of b is that at high lambda level the motion is a cyclotron orbit, and you average the potential fluctuation over the orbit, and this averaging over the orbit basically makes that in the lowest lambda level where the orbits are smaller you average less. And so you have to take into account that the width essentially of the Landau level of scattering time goes like the inverse of b, of square root of b. So as you can see, everything fits very well, and so you can in fact describe the disorder with one single parameter, which either is the Landau level width or the transport, mobility. Now, I want to say a few things now what happens at odd filling factors, because this is where a lot of very strange things are observed. First of all, on the previous curve I showed you, there was no jump at odd filling factors. We only saw jumps at even filling factors. So this is... Okay. Well, anyway, you get the message. And so this is the first something which is very surprising. This is a high mobility sample. How come there is no jump at offsetting factors? Now, here is a curve, a slide that might help to understand why one do expect in a torque measurement to see a contribution at offsetting factors. Now, the G factor is very small. However, you have an exchange enhancement due to Coulomb interaction, which are essentially proportional to the difference in occupation of spin up and spin down states. Now, this occupation is essentially set by the normal component of the magnetic field, so you do expect to see, I mean, so this exchange component is completely anisotropic, just in the same way as the orbital part, and so you do expect to see jump at offsetting factors. And these jumps essentially should measure either for, well, at nu equal 3 or higher, the jumps in associated with the exchange enhancement, and if there are object like skirmions that live at nu equal 1, you should be able to measure the energies directly. Now, here's a sample which has had a higher mobility, but the jumps were actually not sharper in this sample, where we actually saw a large jump at nu equal 1. And this jump at nu equal 1 was consistent with, in fact, just a G factor enhancement of 20, which is reasonable compared to other measurements. However, the energy associated with that was too large to be attributed just to skirmion. So we were a little puzzled. I mean, I was somewhat, in fact, getting irritated by all the talks on skirmion around that time. And so it so happens that Vincent Bayot, who had done all these measurements on specific heat and attributed to all these things, the skirmion brought these samples that were made by Mansur Shaigan. So I say, great, well, we're going to find out whether he saw these things or not. Oh, yeah, oh, well, I have other data where actually we didn't see the skirmion. So this is, these samples that he had were in fact multi-layers, and I will just say a few words about them. So these are delta dope samples where you have, in fact, a multilayer of quantum wells with relatively poor mobility compared to the other samples that I showed you, but relatively low densities. So this was very good for fraction, for example. So this is the way this magnetization curve look on this sample. Now here you see two plots at various at different temperatures, and you can see here, for example, this big peak here, and this corresponds to this non-equilibrium current I had mentioned to you earlier. Now, of course, if you raise the temperature sufficiently, you do introduce some dissipation, and you can quench the non-equilibrium current this way. Now, it so happened that the jumps at nu equal 1 observed here is about 20 Kelvin, which is certainly consistent with the value they observed of about 25 Kelvin from transport, and that energy is about 0.38 of the jump of nu equal 2, and that is actually consistent with the skirmion energy. So this is a situation which is very troublesome, because on one hand, I have data consistent with skirmion energy, I have data consistent with just G factor enhancement, and I have also data consistent with no spins at all. So now, if I was a used car salesman or a congressman trying to be reelected, this might be a good situation. But unfortunately, I'm talking to physicists, and so I have to come up with some reason why there are all these differences. And at the present time, unfortunately, I cannot give you a precise answer. The one thing which is sure, however, is I can tell you that these differences are certainly cannot simply be attributed to mobilities. You know, some of these samples, which have very high mobilities, show nothing, and some with much lower mobilities show very, very well developed skirmions. So there's really something associated with spin structures which is really not related simply to mobility and simple way. Not only mobility, but I would also width of Landau level, because if you look at looking at this width of this jump, as I say, I can get an idea of the width of the Landau level, and they are very, very sharp, and so it's very, very strange. So this is really an open question which will have to be solved. Now, of course, we just can increase the field, and we can goes to the fractional region. So here are two jumps observed at 1/3 and 2/3. And there is one slight complication when you go to these higher fields is that the background starts to be a little bit more difficult to subtract. And so the actual extraction of the value of delta M and the gap is a little bit more difficult. But anyway, we have various ways of doing it, either by taking the difference between the maxima or taking, you know, making the slope construction. And in the end, within 20%, we get about the same number. Now, the gap we get at 1/3 is about 5 Kelvin, and the gap measure at transport is about 5.2 Kelvin. So there is a remarkable agreement in the fractional regime between the transport gap and the thermodynamic gap. In fact, they are very, very close. In all the samples we measured, in all the fraction we looked at, it seems like the agreement is very good, much better than, in fact, in the integer regime. So this is of course something which is nice in the sense that all the work that had been done previously extracting gap from activation activation plots appears to be correct, and I'm sure that all of you will be very happy to hear that. What?
You see the jump in the high mobility
sample. Well, these were 700,000 sample. It's not very high mobility. Well, this was the only sample we had, so we were not able to look at other. I mean, with appropriate density. I mean, I'm pretty sure one would see them also in with higher mobility samples. So now, just here, one more statement I want to make is we took that sample to up to 23 tesla. Well, in the regime of the Wigner crystal, and we didn't see any feature at the level I would say of 1 Kelvin. Okay, so it doesn't mean so. I mean, I would say this means that if there are different phases out there, like was argued by Sudip on Monday, well, on Sunday, I believe, or on Monday, I don't remember. Clearly the energy difference of these phases can't be very large. Because otherwise we would have seen. This is another justification of the use of activation plots. We can, in fact, get the gaps, the energy gaps, and the jumps in delta M at various temperatures, and within the experimental errors, they are the same. So that does justify the use of activation plots for this. Now, one point also is that you can measure, compare the width of these jumps at 1/3, 2/3. We also saw 2/5 and 1, and essentially we find that these jumps, the width of these jumps are essentially the same. So it could be simply that the samples, the density between layers are inhomogeneous, and essentially the width is set by that. Or it simply also could mean that the scattering, the width, is essentially dominated by long-range object and not so much by short-range object. Now, just to conclude, since the time is running out, we also did the measurement on 2D holes. And we do see on these whole systems very clearly very nice gaps and relatively large gaps as well. Whereas in integer regime, the gaps can be seen, but not are not that big, and so I'm pretty sure that based on this thermodynamic measurement, there's either a field dependence of the effective mass or of the scattering time, because it appears that the higher the field you go, the sharper the levels are defined, and so it's clear that on this whole system there are some rather interesting effects that can be seen. So. As conclusion, I would say essentially that there are three conclusions one can take. For the even integer regime, one can see in low disorder regime the pile sawtooth. At higher disorders and low and high nu's, one can see that the Dingle temperature concept works, and so this is very simple. You can in fact describe everything just in terms of the Landau level width, just one parameter. Unfortunately, in the hard integer regime, it's a wildly different behavior. And I believe the effect of this order is pretty mysterious, because we can have, you know, as I say, samples that do show energies consistent with Kermion's energies, other samples with a full exchange enhancement, and other samples, nothing, you know, nothing is seen. So it's really, really very, very peculiar, and it's just not simply, you know, a question of Landau level width. It's clearly not a question of Landau level. Now, in the fraction, you know, the quantum states seems to be sharper in the fractional regime than integer regime, in the sense that we always find that the thermodynamic gaps and the transport gaps to be essentially the same. Now, the electron density could be inhomogeneous, you know, in these samples, because we have, you know, similar width for all these jumps, but they also indicate that it's the short-range scattering is essentially all screened out by the many-body wave function, and it's only the long-range scattering which remains. Thank you.
Two very quick comments, and
right.
I have a question. So, one comment is that charge or the gap at filling factor one is not expected to be very different when the lowest energy charges are skirmions compared to the case where they're ordinary quasi particles.
Okay.
So, I'm surprised that you
said that. I skipped one transparency, unfortunately. Now, this is. This is a sample where we actually see the jumps at U equal 3 and U equal 1. And we can compare essentially the magnitude of the jump at U equal 3 and U equal 1. Now, my understanding is that it should be smaller, I mean, there should be a difference between U equal 3 and U equal 1 if you have Kermion. And here, there appears to be the same.
Okay, but not a big difference in necessarily in the size, numerical size of the gap.
Okay.
The other comment is that naively, the thermodynamic gap at filling factor third should be three times bigger than the charge gap because of the fractional charge. So maybe it also is true there that the thermodynamic gap is smaller.
Now we did take into account of this factor of three actually in the numbers that I quoted. Yeah.
And so the question I wanted to ask was, what in the samples where you don't see any magnetization jump at filling factor one, do you see filling factor one quantum Hall effect in those same samples?
Of course, very very clearly. Yeah. Okay, what is the connection between the integer, the gaps in integer regime in the thermodynamics and in the transport? Well, there are different quantities, okay, and essentially that does depend on the disorder. I mean, this is this picture, see? So if you have very weak disorder, and essentially this this remains very close to the extended state, the thermodynamic gap and the transport gap will be the same. Now that varies essentially. If you have a sample for mobility 2 or 3 millions, that is roughly the case. The difference between transport gaps and thermodynamic gaps are very close. Now, if you take a sample with a mobility less than 2 million, then you can start to see very significant differences, I would say, between transport and thermodynamic gap in the integer regime.
What about odd and even integers?
Odd and even integers. Now, odd and even integer, you have this this exchange enhancement that comes in. And so that is... Look at, for example, this plot. It does depend, you know, that is quite sample dependent. Now, here at nu equal 2, you have some non-equilibrium current. So the actual gap at nu equal 2 is, in fact, very, very similar in size to the one at nu equal 4. So you can just compare the sizes here. Here you've got roughly a factor of 2, okay, in this jump in magnetization. And, you know, to get the jump, I mean, to get the delta mu, you know, you have to scale with B, as I say. Delta mu over B is delta M, essentially. So on this sample, you have a factor of 2. Now, on other samples, you can get, you know, 70%. You know, I showed you earlier jump of the order of 70% of the cyclotron gap. So it does vary somewhat from sample to sample. As I say, odd news are relatively, you can get very different results in this case.